I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Today, based on information developed by that investigation, a Fulton County grand jury returned a true bill of indictment, charging 19 individuals with violations of Georgia law arising from a criminal conspiracy to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election in this state.
For the fourth time in 4 months, a grand jury has indicted former President Donald Trump. The indictment stems from a sweeping investigation by Fulton County Prosecutor Fannie Willis in Georgia. It's built around Georgia's RICO law, which is often used to go after organized crime. We'll go to Atlanta to speak with veteran journalist Michael Isikoff, who's writing a book on the Georgia case, and get a response from Latasha Brown, co-founder of the Black Voters Matter Fund. We'll also speak with longtime consumer advocate and former presidential candidate Ralph Nader, who says special counsel Jack Smith's January 6th indictment of Trump should include insurrection.
It's important to say also that all presidents violate laws. He's just taking it to a new and diverse height. But he's doing it so brazenly that if he gets away with it, he will continue to contribute to the institutionalization of lawlessness by presidents of the United States.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A grand jury in Georgia has indicted Donald Trump and 18 others, charging them with organizing a criminal enterprise to overturn the 2020 election results in Georgia. Trump faces a total of 13 counts in the indictment. Others indicted include former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, several of Trump's attorneys, including Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman, Sidney Powell, and Jenna Ellis, as well as former Justice Department official Jeffrey Clark. This marks Donald Trump's fourth indictment in just over 4 months. The 41 felony count indictment is built around Georgia's RICO law, which is often used to go after organized crime. This is Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis.
Every individual charged in the indictment is charged with one count of violating Georgia's Racketeer, Influenced, and Corrupt Organizations Act, through participation in a criminal enterprise in Fulton County, Georgia, and elsewhere, to accomplish the illegal goal of allowing Donald J. Trump to seize the presidential term of office beginning on January 20th, 21.
D.A. Willis opened the probe after Trump pressured Georgia's Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger in January 2021 to, quote, find 11,780 votes that was the margin Trump would have needed to defeat Joe Biden in Georgia. Part of the charges stem from a breach of voting machines in Coffee County, about 200 miles from Atlanta. The indictment alleges the criminal enterprise operated in other states, including Michigan, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and New Mexico. Fannie Willis has given Trump and his co-defendants until August 25th to turn themselves in. This all comes as Trump is the Republican frontrunner in the 2024 presidential race. We'll have more on the story after headlines. In Hawaii, the death toll from the Maui fires has reached 99, expected to climb significantly as 1,300 people remain unaccounted for. Crews have searched for bodies in only about 25% of the devastated area. It's the already deadliest wildfire in the United States in over a century. Hawaii Governor Josh Green spoke Monday.
As I shared earlier, the scale of destruction is incredible. So our hearts are broken even a little bit more than when we were together 48 hours ago with the extra fatalities. Also, you know that we're well over 2,200 structures that have been destroyed. 86% of them were residential.
In a landmark climate case, a Montana judge has ruled in favor of a group of young people who've sued the state for violating their constitutional rights as it pushed policies that encourage the use of fossil fuels. In her decision, Montana Judge Kathy Seeley wrote, quote, plaintiffs have a fundamental constitutional right to a clean and healthful environment, which includes climate. The judge went on to rule, quote, Montana's emissions and climate change have been proven to be a substantial factor in causing climate impacts to Montana's environment and harm and injury, unquote. The case was brought by 16 children and young adults ranging from 5 to 22 years of age. One of the plaintiffs, 19-year-old Grace Gibson Snyder, recently appeared on Democracy Now! And talked about Glacier National Park in Montana.
Watching those glaciers melt is such a, you know, devastating thing because it's so iconic for the state. It's so essential for the well-being of the people and of the environment here. And it's just beautiful. And I would hate to be a part of a future where that's not present, where that's not a thing that my kids get to grow up with. And so, you know, those are my impacts. And the plaintiffs in the case have, you know, everything from respiratory illnesses that are exacerbated by climate change to a cattle ranch where the cattle are dying because of drought and famine and et cetera. And so it's been, we all have experienced this in different capacities.
The Montana ruling came on the same day that NASA confirmed last month was the warmest July ever recorded on Earth. Sarah Kupnick is NOAA's chief scientist.
It was the warmest July by a long shot, specifically by more than a third of a degree Fahrenheit. That may not sound like a lot, but the margin for most global records is on the order of a hundredth of a degree or two. So last month was way, way warmer than anything we've ever seen.
In other climate news, more than 50 people have died in northern India after heavy rainfall caused devastating landslides. At least 9 of the deaths occurred when a temple collapsed in the city of Shimla. In Ecuador, another political leader has been assassinated. Less than a week after the assassination of presidential candidate Fernando Villavicencio, and just days before Ecuadorians head to the polls this Sunday. Pedro Briones was fatally shot in the northern province of Esmeraldas. He was a local leader of the Citizen Revolution Movement, the party of progressive presidential frontrunner Luisa Gonzalez and former president Rafael Correa. Gonzalez blamed the soaring wave of violence in Ecuador on President Guillermo Lasso, who dissolved Congress in May to avoid impeachment proceedings. Gonzalez wrote on social media, quote, Ecuador is living its bloodiest moment. We owe this to the total abandonment of an inept government and a state taken over by mafias. At least 26 people died in the Amhara region of Ethiopia in a military airstrike Sunday. Eyewitnesses said the airstrike wounded at least 55 people. Ethiopia's government declared a six-month state of emergency in the Amhara region August 4th after clashes intensified between regional groups and the Ethiopian military. There are reports of hundreds, possibly thousands of arrests in the region since the emergency rule began. The government of the Russian Republic of Dagestan has declared a day of mourning after at least 35 people were killed and 100 injured by a massive explosion at a gas station. At least 3 of the dead were children. Russian authorities have begun a criminal investigation. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed 2 Palestinians earlier today in a raid on a refugee camp near the city of Jericho. One of the dead was identified as 16-year-old Kusai al-Walaji. He's at least the 41st child killed by Israeli forces this year. Meanwhile, the Israeli newspaper Haaretz is reporting a Palestinian family evicted from their home in occupied East Jerusalem has been ordered to pay around $13,000 to the Israeli police and Israeli settlers to cover the costs of their own eviction. Monday marked the 10th anniversary of the Rabaa massacre, when Egyptian forces opened fire on a sit-in where tens of thousands of people had camped out in Cairo to protest the ouster of Egypt's first democratically elected president, Mohamed Morsi. Human Rights Watch estimates over 900 protesters were killed in what the group has described as, quote, the worst single-day killing of protesters in modern history. No one's been held responsible over the past decade. The Minister of Defense at the time was Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who's ruled Egypt for nearly a decade and is a close U.S. ally. Under al-Sisi, Egypt is now jailing about 60,000 political prisoners. This is the Egyptian human rights activist Hossam Bagat.
What we are demanding right now is accountability. Individual responsibility must be assigned. And we believe, and we have learned from the experiences of other countries around the world that also lived under military dictatorship, that the time for justice and the time for accountability will come.
A warning to our audience, the following story is graphic descriptions of police violence. In Mississippi, six former police officers who called themselves the Goon Squad have pleaded guilty to state charges after they raided a home and tortured two black men. On January 24th, the officers burst into a home, then beat, handcuffed, waterboarded, sexually violated, and tasered the two men, Michael Corey Jenkins and Eddie Terrell Parker. They sexually abused them with a sex device while shouting racial slurs. One of the officers put a gun in Jenkins' mouth for a mock execution and pulled the trigger. The bullet lacerated Jenkins' tongue, broke his jaw, and exited through his neck. The officers then planted drugs at the scene in an attempt to cover up their act. The officers have also pleaded guilty to federal charges. Visit democracynow.org to see our recent interview with the victims, Michael Corey Jenkins and Eddie Terrell Parker. Some of the officers face life in prison. In Nebraska, a judge has upheld a new statewide ban on abortion after 12 weeks and a ban on gender-affirming care for minors. Ruth Richardson, the CEO of Planned Parenthood North Central States, decried the ruling, saying it was a, quote, devastating blow to Nebraskans' fundamental right to make what should be private decisions between them and their doctors, unquote. The number of unhoused people in the United States has jumped 11% over the past year, the largest increase in at least 15 years. This according to a tally by The Wall Street Journal. Rising housing costs and the cancellation of COVID-19 relief funds have helped fuel a rise in people unable to find or afford housing. And the Washington Post has revealed the Smithsonian Institution holds a so-called racial brain collection that contains 254 brains gathered in the first half of the 20th century at the behest of a racist anthropologist who was trying to scientifically prove the superiority of white people. An investigation by the Washington Post found most of the brains in the Smithsonian collection were removed from dead black and indigenous people and other people of color, often taken without consent from their families. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. For the fourth time in just over 4 months, a grand jury has indicted former President Donald Trump as he continues to campaign as the Republican frontrunner in the 2024 presidential race. This is the second time he's been charged with trying to interfere with the 2020 election in the last 2 weeks. This time, a Georgia grand jury indicted Trump and 18 of his allies, stemming from Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis's investigation into their attempt to overturn the 2020 election in Georgia. D.A. Willis announced the indictment Monday after 11:30 Eastern time at a press conference in Atlanta, about 2 hours after it was handed to the judge.
Today, based on information developed by that investigation, a Fulton County grand jury returned a true bill of indictment, charging 19 individuals with violations of Georgia law arising from a criminal conspiracy to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election in this state. The indictment includes 41 felony counts and is 97 pages long. Please remember that everyone charged in this bill of indictment is presumed innocent. Specifically, the indictment brings felony charges against Donald John Trump, Rudolph William Louis Giuliani, John Charles Eastman, Mark Randall Meadows, John Cheeseborough, Jeffrey Clark. Every individual charged in the indictment is charged with one count of violating Georgia's Racketeer, Influenced, and Corrupt Organizations Act through participation in a criminal enterprise in Fulton County, Georgia, and elsewhere to accomplish the illegal goal of allowing Donald J. Trump to seize the presidential term of office beginning on January 20th, 21. Specifically, the participants in association took various actions in Georgia and elsewhere to block the counting of the votes of the presidential electors who were certified as the winners of Georgia's 2020 general election.
Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis announced that arrest warrants have been issued for Donald Trump and his 18 co-defendants and gave them until August 25th to voluntarily surrender. She said she plans to try all of them together in proceedings she hopes to begin within the next 6 months. Earlier Monday, a document listing criminal charges to be brought against Trump was briefly posted to the Fulton County Clerk's Office website before the grand jury's decision. Trump used the apparent error to claim the system's rigged against him. As Trump struggles with legal fees, he urged supporters in a fundraising email to, quote, never surrender. The special grand jury in this case heard testimony from 75 witnesses along with other evidence. One of the most notorious moments in the pressure campaign Trump and his allies conducted on Georgia officials was a phone call in which Trump asked Georgia's Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to find the votes he needed to overturn Joe Biden's victory in the state.
So, look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state.
D.A. Willis opened her probe after this call. Part of the charges also stem from a breach of voting machines in Coffee County, about 200 miles from Atlanta. The indictment alleges the criminal enterprise operated in other states, including Michigan, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and New Mexico. Fani Willis has given Trump and his co-defendants until August 25th to turn themselves in. For more, we're joined by Michael Lissikoff, veteran investigative journalist writing a book on the Georgia investigation. He was in Atlanta in the courtroom when the indictment was announced. Welcome back to Democracy Now! Michael, can you first respond to what has taken place as history was being made? Talk about the significance of these charges at the state level, something that President Trump, if he were to become president again, could not pardon himself for.
Right. I mean, it was quite a night. And this is a sprawling indictment in many ways, much more comprehensive than the recent indictment brought by special counsel Jack Smith. It tells the whole story of what took place after the 2020 election. And it really zeroes in on multiple fronts, the fake elector meetings, the pressure on election officials such as Brad Raffensperger, the false testimony that Trump's surrogates made to the Georgia legislature. But probably the part that I think will leap out most and perhaps hit the public in the strongest way is the intimidation of election workers. Ruby Freeman, the Fulton County election worker who was targeted by Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump himself in that phone call to Brad Raffensperger, terrorized, forced to leave her home at the recommendation of the FBI. And the indictment lays out how Trump surrogates like went to her home in an effort to intimidate her and get her to confess lest she be facing criminal charges herself. It's a really powerful story, and it's a personal story. And I think that in that way, this indictment is going to connect to people that goes beyond the other ones that have already been brought against Donald Trump.
And talk about this issue of conspiracy, of using RICO, which is more often than not used to go after the mob. And what you see in this 98-page indictment is Donald Trump's direct involvement.
Absolutely. And, you know, look, the use of RICO is something that Fannie Willis has used frequently as a prosecutor, as a deputy DA, and as DA herself. It is Georgia's version of RICO is actually more expansive than the federal RICO statute, which, of course, was passed back in 1970, the Nixon era, to go after the mafia. It's now frequently used in white collar cases and other criminal cases. But it is one thing that leapt out in Fannie Willis's brief press conference last night. She was asked, could people convicted under this RICO statute get probation? And she said, no, they cannot. The penalties for a RICO violation are 5 years to 20 years in a Georgia penitentiary. So that is something that I think a lot of people are going to try to get their heads around.
I mean, Michael, this is very significant. There are mandatory minimums here that so many have faced in the past. That means a judge has no discretion. But they can't not put them in jail.
That's what Fannie Willis told the press last night. And, that raises a whole host of questions when the lead defendant is Donald Trump. Just a couple of other, ironies to the use of RICO. Rudy Giuliani, former U.S. attorney before he was New York City mayor, used RICO to go after the mob. And, people will note he's now being hoisted on his own petard. The law, a version of the law that he pioneered in going after mobsters, is now being used against him. Mark Meadows, White House chief of staff. When's the last time a White House chief of staff was indicted? You'd have to go back to H.R. Haldeman during the Nixon era, right? So you look at the range of defendants here. David Schaefer, the chairman of the Georgia Republican Party. Jeff Clark, the Justice Department lawyer who Donald Trump wanted to install as the acting attorney general to further his goal of staying president. It's really breathtaking in a lot of ways.
Let's talk about Coffee County, about 200 miles from Atlanta, for a moment, because you have Scott Hall tied to the Coffee County election system breach, Misty Hampton tied, who is the Coffee County election supervisor, also, of course, Sidney Powell, Trump campaign lawyer, all related to this story. And talk about the revelation that just came out around an actual breach of electoral machine and why this is so significant in this case, Michael.
Yes. In the indictment, Fannie Willis calls what happened at Coffee County a case of computer theft. And this was an operation that actually took place after January 6th. And is still determined to try to find some way. Somehow, Trump's team believed that if they could get access inside the election, to the software, inside Dominion election machines, they could find the fraud that Sidney Powell had talked about. The Venezuelan socialist Chinese communists were manipulating the vote somehow. If they could just get inside those Dominion machines. The problem is that that software and all the election data was protected. In fact, there were instructions to all election officials in Georgia. They may not release, publicly disclose this data. It was sensitive election technology, proprietary, could not be publicly released. What they did is they found a few Trump-friendly officials at the local official who, quote, invited them in, which they had no authority to do, and they spent a full day in Coffee County copying, imaging that data that they had no right to. As I said, computer theft, computer trespass, and it's a key part of this indictment. And in the indictment, if you read it, they can link this, up the chain, including to people like David Schaefer, the chairman of the Georgia Republican Party, who was in touch with Scott Hall on the eve and during the day that they were breaking in to this election office.
And talk about the fact that there are arrest warrants issued as opposed to summons in other of the cases around President Trump, where they negotiate everything, time of his surrender, everything. Arrest warrant, if he doesn't show up by the 25th, he is thrown in jail, and the others are, too. What about the significance of this? Also, them saying in Georgia, yep, there's going to be mugshots, et cetera.
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating to watch over the next 2 weeks for that August 25th date. Does everybody show up? If not, there will have to be efforts at extradition to return the defendants to Fulton County for criminal processing. I don't know how this is going to play out. Donald Trump has shown up in the case of the federal indictments and in the case of the New York City indictment by Alvin Bragg. If this one has got to stick in his craw, as it were, more than any of the others. He was obsessed with Georgia, and now to have to show up at the Fulton County Jail where defendants are processed. And also one other factor to watch here is negotiation of a bond, because under Georgia law, there's not a lot of if a defendant is deemed to be at risk of not just a flight, but of intimidating witnesses, they're not eligible for a bond. So we'll see. We don't know who the judge is going to be yet, but that judge is going to have a very interesting process to deal with Donald Trump. And what is the bond set at? Fannie Willis has set out bonds in the past on RICO cases for hundreds of thousands of dollars. This one is a much bigger case in a lot of ways. So I think there's going to be quite a bit of back and forth about the bond that Donald Trump would have to post in order to secure his freedom.
Finally, you're writing a book on this. What most surprised you last night at midnight? I think the news conference started at 11:37. What most surprised you? You've been digging into this for a while now.
Just the sweeping nature of the indictment, the way the indictment ties all these multiple players to a common conspiracy. And I got to say, you played the clip at the start, the way Fannie Willis chose her words, saying this was a conspiracy to allow Donald Trump to seize power, to seize the presidency. really interesting word that gave a sense of how the prosecutors here are viewing what took place. Now, look, Donald Trump has some pretty powerful defense lawyers. They're going to be attacking this. Drew Findling is his lead lawyer, the billion-dollar lawyer who's made a name for himself representing rap stars. He's a very experienced defense lawyer. We got to, hold back and watch and see how this plays out. But as I said, in terms of the sweeping nature of this, it is really something we haven't seen before in all our coverage of the 2020 election aftermath. And I think it's going to get a lot more interesting.
Michael Isikoff, veteran investigative journalist, writing a book on the Georgia investigation. When we come back, we will talk with the head of the Black Voters Matter Fund, and then to Ralph Nader. Stay with us.